¿Qué tal amigos de Good Gamer? Esta semana les tenemos un poco de la ESL One que se celebrará en Nueva York. También un poco de la información de las notas del parche 6.9 de League of Legends, la reseña de Battlefleet Gothic Armada y no se pierdan el adelanto de Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. ¡Game on! La ESL One New York se realizará en el Barclays Center en Brooklyn, Nueva York, los días 1 y 2 de octubre. Por ahora el único juego que se ha anunciado es Counter-Strike Global Offensive, el cual tendrá un premio de cerca de $250,000. La liga anunciará más títulos para la competencia en las siguientes semanas. Para que no digan que los jugadores profesionales de eSports no hacen ejercicio físico, los jugadores del equipo Complexity Gaming de Call of Duty es el primero en hacer uso del nuevo programa de IMG Academy, instituto encargado de entrenar física y mentalmente a atletas como Andrea Gassi y María Sharapova. El equipo brasileño Tempo Storm se coronó ganador de la novena temporada de Sibo Gfinity, tras derrotar 3-1 al equipo SK Gaming. Tempo Storm comenzó bajo el nombre de Games Academy y en febrero pasado fueron adquiridos por precisamente Tempo Storm. A escasamente 2 días de haber salido el parche 6.9 de League of Legends, tenemos una gran cantidad de cambios que finalmente Riot, tratando de mantener el ritmo de los demás MOBAs, han metido. Tenemos no solo cambios completos a algunos de los magos del carril central, sino también algunos ajustes a otros de los magos. Bastantes cambios en los ítems, entre los cuales tenemos que Fajin ya no va a estar quitando el Ultimate de Zed, entre otras cosas, solamente va a estar quitando los debuffos. Tenemos además, por ejemplo, que todos los ítems de AP defensivos ahora estarán dando reducción de enfriamiento, por lo que, si en tus runas todavía tienes un poco del mismo, tendrás que empezar a cambiarlas. Además, los ítems que te daban resistencia mágica han quedado, si no destruidos, bastante atrás, forzando a muchos de los tanques del meta a forzar otro tipo de itemizaciones para poder seguir dueleando o por lo menos aportar algo al equipo. Tú, ¿cómo es que estás viendo el parche? ¿Ya te adaptaste? Far Harbor es el nuevo DLC de historia para Fallout 4, el cual, en palabras de Bethesda, incluye la masa de tierra más grande que hayan hecho para un addon. El DLC nos llevará a una colonia secreta de Fiends, en la isla de Far Harbor, donde encontrarán nuevas criaturas radioactivas, armas y misiones de facciones. Far Harbor llegará el 19 de mayo a PC, PlayStation 4 y Xbox One. Relic Entertainment se encuentra trabajando en Dawn of War 3, el cual combinará la escala épica de la primera entrega con la personalización y héroes élite de Dawn of War 2. Aún no hay fecha de salida para este título de estrategia en tiempo real, basada en el cada día más saturado universo de Warhammer 40,000. Oculus continúa haciendo enojar a aquellos que compulsivamente ordenaron en preventa al dispositivo de realidad virtual Oculus Rift. Primero, fue retrasando la fecha de entrega del dispositivo debido a problemas de suministro de materiales. Y ahora, desde la semana pasada, pusieron un número limitado de unidades a la venta en Best Buy y otras tiendas de Estados Unidos. Esto antes de que las órdenes de preventa sean completadas. Encima, Oculus sugirió que la gente que preordenó fuera a probar suerte en adquirir su dispositivo en tiendas y, una vez que lo tuvieran, cancelaran su preventa. Mighty No. 1, el nuevo juego de Keiji Inafune que se convirtió en todo un mito, ya que una y otra vez han retrasado la fecha de lanzamiento. Estará saliendo ahora sí el 21 de junio de este año en PC, PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Xbox 360, Xbox One y Wii U, un año después de la fecha original prometida en la campaña de Kickstarter hecha en el 2013. Call of Duty Infinite Warfare. El secreto peor guardado de Activision será el primer Call of Duty en abrazar totalmente a la ciencia ficción, llevándonos en esta ocasión al espacio, en un conflicto a lo largo del sistema solar. Además de combate a pie, Infinite Warfare permitirá usar jets de combate, tanto dentro como fuera de planetas. El juego será lanzado el 4 de noviembre.
Tindalos Interactive se encargó de trasladar el juego de mesa Battlefleet Gothic en un juego de estrategia y táctica llamado Battlefleet Gothic Armada. Vale la pena, véanlo en esta reseña.
Battlefleet Gothic Armada nos pone como almirantes al frente de una flota de enormes naves, en el sector gótico del universo de Warhammer 40.000. La acción se desarrolla en un plano 2D, el cual, aunque elimina el chiste de estar en el espacio, facilita un poco las cosas. El juego cuenta con varios elementos de títulos RPG, como el que cada nave cuenta con distintas habilidades que deben enfriarse antes de poder volver a usarlas, y el hecho de que van subiendo de nivel. Como almirantes también podemos subir de nivel, lo que nos abre la posibilidad de adquirir mejores naves y aumentar la cantidad que podemos tener. Una característica distintiva de Battlefleet Gothic Armada es que aun si perdemos una misión en la campaña de historia, no es el fin del juego. Por nuestro fracaso, recibiremos menos recompensas y experiencia. Y las naves que hayan sido destruidas continuarán siendo parte de nuestra flota, pero deberemos esperar un par de turnos antes de que podamos volver a usarlas. Y a la larga, el juego se irá haciendo más difícil de acuerdo a las misiones que hayamos fallado. El secreto para ganar en Battlefleet Gothic recae en administrar adecuadamente las naves de nuestra flota. Y a pesar de que los controles tienden a no ser nuestros mejores aliados en esta tarea, al presionar un botón en cada nave, la inteligencia artificial se encargará de activar automáticamente las habilidades, lo que permite enfocarnos en manejar a las naves más poderosas y dejar en automático a las fragatas. En resumen, Tyndalos Interactive hizo un buen trabajo en trasladar el juego de mesa original de Battlefleet Gothic a un juego de estrategia y táctica en tiempo real. Aunque el juego sufre de desbalanceo entre las cuatro razas principales, y los controles no llegan a ser los más eficaces en momentos críticos, en los que uno debe brincar de nave a nave o grupos de naves. Una larga campaña de historia, un modo riña, el modo multijugador y la meticulosa recreación gráfica de las naves hacen de este un buen título para los fanáticos de los simuladores de combate espacial.
Tuve la oportunidad de platicar con René Gittings acerca de su proyecto Potions: A Curious Tale, actualmente en Kickstarter, y también sobre los problemas a los que se enfrentan los desarrolladores independientes, sobre todo cuando son mujeres.
I started by myself and worked on it for 6 months, building out all of the initial systems, inventory crafting, monster AI, and then at that point I realized that I needed to start polishing the game and bringing in elements like real art, not just programmer art, and sound effects and music to make it something that I could show off to other people. So what's really interesting about being an indie developer is if you're a AAA developer or if you're like a somehow funded developer, if you have the money behind it, you can build out the game and make sure that it's playable and then add in the art and things like that to make sure it's pretty. Whereas when you're an indie game developer and you're you need to get more press all of the time, and you need to go to these expos and show off your game, and you need to work on getting funding before you're finished with the game, like I'm doing with my Kickstarter, you have to add a lot of those polish elements much earlier in the game the game development process than you would normally. And so that was a little bit of a challenge starting to integrate that stuff. But it's turned out really beautiful, so I really enjoy it. The story came kind of second. The idea of the game was based around a mild frustration with a game I had been playing, which was a roguelike dungeon crawler that had different levels that were procedurally generated. And it had a leveling up system, but it also had a starvation system, so you had to get food or else you'd starve to death. You never ended up running into the number of monsters you needed while running through levels normally to level up to the amount where it was easy to kill the boss monster. So you ended up having to run around levels waiting for more creatures to spawn. And since you can starve to death and there's not more food when you're waiting for creatures to spawn, it ended up being a really frustrating mechanic. So I decided to design a game where there was no experience from killing things. There's no innate benefit from killing things, and that where there's no auto attack in every single attack that you use, which ended up being spells or potions, would cost something. And so I call that resource limited combat. And I think, and that's where the idea of how do I make resource limited combat? Oh, I know, I'll craft each thing and I was like, oh, I can craft potions. And then, okay, well, who's crafting potions? Well, let's make it this young witch who's discovered her potion brewing abilities. And like, oh, what world should she live in? And I'm really inspired by fairy tales and folklore. So I brought in all of those from different cultures to build out that world. And that's sort of where her story takes place. And that's where it's been developing. In the world that Luna lives in, everyone has, you know, varying amounts of magic abilities, sometimes very little or sometimes more. When she was living at home with her mother and playing around in the kitchen trying to make stuff, she accidentally combined some ingredients together that completely like blew off the back porch of the house. And her mom's like, all right, well, it seems like you have the family ability in potion brewing. That's your like magical ability. And I don't have it. So why don't you go study with your grandmother and be her apprentice? And so she goes there and starts studying under her grandmother. And, you know, her goal is to become a potions master, to train to the best of her abilities. And so there's different ways that can happen. Well, first of all, running away is always a good option. If a monster chases you and you don't need items from it. Okay, so there's mushrooms all over the game. You can find mushrooms fairly easily. But there's also these little monsters called mushdooms. And they look like mushrooms until you walk up to them, and then they'll pop out of the ground and start chasing you. And they're pretty easy to kill, but the only item they drop is mushrooms. And you probably don't actually need more mushrooms. So generally they're a waste to fight. So when you see one, even though it's really easy to kill, the best thing to do is probably to just run away. In regards to interactions with other creatures, you can use monsters against each other. So if you had a giant spider that shoots poison and mushrooms chasing you, you can use the venom from the spider attack and run the mushrooms through it, and they'll die because the poison kills them. There's a character in the game called the Gobbler, and it's a giant angry turkey, but it's not aggressive. It just sort of waddles around being scary looking. And if you attack it, it'll kick your butt. It does like a third of your health in one hit, and it knocks you back, and then it heals itself to full. So it's a very, very hard creature to kill, and if you kill it, it doesn't drop anything. There's no benefit to killing it. However, you get a hint in the game that though the turkey may have wings, it is scared of flying things. Sort of that fairy tale rim ring. And since you have a magical broom, which you can fly around on, if you chase the turkey on your broom, it freaks out and runs away while flapping, and it flaps so hard it flaps feathers off. And so you can run around after it and pick up the feathers that you've scared off of it. And those feathers are actually a base ingredient for health potions. You know, a common perception that I've seen while talking with people is that that indie game development is purely a hobby, or that people treat it that way. They're like, oh, well, what you need that money for? It's like, well, to pay artists? They're like, well, aren't your artists working for free? It's like, no, my artists aren't working for free. I have to pay my artists. That's kind of how you employ people. So that's a little tough to deal with too, especially because, you know, especially for artists, it's so hard for them to find honest paying work sometimes, because you have thousands of people out there saying like, oh yeah, I'll pay you when the project's done, or I'll pay you a percentage of the profits from the project if the project finishes. And that's how you get the whole like starving artist scenario there. It's that they're doing work and not getting paid for it. So that's something that I have wanted to avoid, and I've avoided. What I think is also really interesting about, you know, games versus music is if you're an artist and you produce a CD of like 12 tracks of 12 songs, and then you charge $10, $15, or $20 for it, like that's in the normal range that people would expect. And they expect that cost to be the same or very similar between new artists and, you know, more popular experienced artists. However, with game development, people will be like, oh, well, I will pay $60 for this AAA game, but I won't pay more than $5 for this indie game because it's like, it's smaller and it's not as pretty or something. But then people get really conservative the amount of money that they're willing to pay for a game at all. And, you know, I've seen discussions online where people are complaining that $10 is too much for a game that somebody spent 5 years of their life making. And, you know, that's something that definitely can hurt indie developers and can help hurt developers who are trying to do so much on their own. You know, certainly, unfortunately, for some reason, gaming, especially the past decade or so, has been seen very much as a male space. And, you know, that's really not true. Like, over 50% of gamers are women, but only 22% of the game industry are women. The rest are men. And I think that's because there's a lot of this, you know, harshness and criticism that women receive both in games and within technology. I've certainly received, you know, I've been harassed as a female gamer. I've received some very interesting death threats to my personal cell phone number. I've had people say, like, oh, you're going to this event, I'm going to come there and beat you up. Pretty much for disagreeing with them while being female, which is unfortunate. And then on the video game development side, I find that there's a bit of a innate sexism. Like people don't really think about it, but they make assumptions due to my gender. For example, if I ever show someone my game, they'll say, oh, I really like the art. You did a good job on the art. And I'll say, oh, thank you. Like, my team does a good job. And then they'll be like, wait, so you don't do the art? I'm like, no, I don't do that. They're like, oh, what do you do? Do you do, like, just the marketing? They're like, no, I don't do the marketing either. Well, actually, I guess I do the marketing. A good example of this is one time I was talking to a guy at an industry event, and we were talking about my project, and he said, oh, cool, well, who's all on your team? I said, okay, I have a character artist, an animator, an environment artist, a musician, and then I do everything else. And he goes, oh, well, who does the programming? I do the programming. But it's really frustrating because I basically said that, you know, like, I do everything else. Programming is part of everything else. And then there's instances where I'll be standing next to, like, a male friend at a game industry event. And this happens all the time. I'll be assumed to be working for them. Just like, I have a lot of indie friends who run their own studios. And it'll be assumed, like, automatically that I work for them, or that I'm not even in the game industry and I'm just, like, a girlfriend or wife or something in the area. And that can be really frustrating, especially as someone who's worked really hard to reach out and to try to make the game industry more accessible, especially for women. I think that Potions of Curious Tale really does have a very unique approach to the traditional action adventure RPG style game, and it's really fun because it challenges all of the expectations that you have from normal games, because combat isn't always the answer and you're not always going to get a benefit from killing every fluffy bunny you see, and it even turns some of the fairy tales on their head. So I think that people will get a kick out of it because it's a little bit of an unexpected twist.
Blizzard está próximo a lanzar su primer juego totalmente original llamado Overwatch. Y estas son nuestras impresiones de la beta de este disparador multijugador.
En todos los aspectos, Overwatch es un disparador competitivo en primera persona, que lo único que toma de los títulos MOBA es las distintas clases de personajes y la enorme cantidad de ellos que uno puede seleccionar, 21 en total. Cada partida está conformada de 6 jugadores en cada equipo, y los modos de juego son variantes de modalidades como Rey de la Colina y Captura de Territorios, con los suficientes cambios que los llegan a hacer sentir únicos. Las clases de personajes son ofensivos, de soporte, tanque y defensivos. Como imaginarán, un buen balance en la selección es esencial para la partida. aunque hay campo para experimentar combinaciones, ya que cada que somos eliminados tenemos la opción de escoger a un nuevo personaje, lo cual permite a uno y al equipo adaptarse conforme avanza la partida. Overwatch no cuenta con una campaña de historia, lo cual es una lástima ya que los mapas derraman detalles por todos lados, dando la sensación de que el apartado multijugador es solo la punta del iceberg. El juego será lanzado el próximo 24 de mayo en computadora PlayStation 4 y Xbox One.
Esto ha sido todo por hoy. Pero no se decepcionen, ni se desanimen, porque pronto estaremos dando, para ustedes que son fans de League of Legends o de los coleccionables, este pequeño figurín. No se olviden de seguirnos en nuestras redes sociales, en Good Gamer Latam, y nos vemos hasta la próxima.